This is Thought Crime. I'm your host, Wesley Fox, editor of PrescientSciFi.com. For this episode 28, I am joined by Microsoft Matt, and we are here to discuss and review Captain America Civil War, which has been in theaters for about 8 days. So we have decided, since it's been out for this long, that we are going to do spoilers the whole way through. So if you have not seen the movie and you do not want it spoiled, stop listening. And that is where, and that's the warning you're going to get. So spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. Don't listen to this. There's your warning. And next up, next order of business, of course, as usual, we're sitting here enjoying a North Carolina beer. Microsoft Matt, first of all, how you doing today? And if you'd like, tell us a little bit about this beer.
Doing well. Thanks for having me again. Really excited to be doing the show today. This is Burrito. It's a Mexican lager. Kind of funny. It's no dairy, sub hops. It's brewed and canned by Oscar Blues Brewery. It's in Brevard, North Carolina. Pardon me if I'm pronouncing Brevard incorrectly. I like that it's a Mexican lager here in May, right on the heels of Cinco de Mayo.
Yep. No accident there.
It's really good. It's an amber lager, decent sized head on it. It's got a crisp, biting finish. It's got a good taste, and I think that it's got a light hoppiness to it. I think it's more kind of like a Yingling, if you guys are familiar with that. And I like it.
Yeah, it tastes a lot like Yingling, which is very common over here on the East Coast. It's made by Oscar Blues Brewery, and it's either Brevard, or Brevar, North Carolina. We don't know the pronunciation. And it's a 4%, though. So it's not only is it Yingling, it actually has the percent alcohol content of Yingling, which is, I think, in the high fours, actually. But it's a pretty good one, but it's light, and it won't get you drunk.
Kind of like the movie.
All right, so let's go ahead and get to the movie here, because this is going to go much differently than our previous reviews. Usually, Matt and I are in pretty strong consensus with each other. Also, we have consensus with the audience. In this case, I am a mild dissenter from the broad reviews. Matt is a strong dissenter from the reviews.
Yes.
And we're going to do, and one thing here I'll do, the reason I do these kind of movies is because they're very big and they do have a very, very slight hint, just a slight aftertaste of science fiction. But these Marvel movies are 98-99% fantasy, just like the DC, just like Batman v Superman. These are predominantly fantasy. So I'm going to try and ignore Matt, you can do whatever you want. But I'm going to try and restrain myself from some of the implausible nonsense that happens in this movie. I'm going to try and suspend disbelief on that, because the movie is geared towards a younger audience that more wants comic book fantasy. So I will do that. But since Matt, you've told me before we started here, you had some pretty strong feelings on this movie. So I'm going to go ahead and we're just going to do question after question here. So you don't have to, like, you know, I'm going to do like kind of a semi-interrogation here.
Okay.
Because this went so differently for us.
Drill me. I'm ready, because I'm going to drill this movie. I got some issues.
If you could say one thing that you just did not like about this movie, and you did not like it, if you could just say the top one, what was the top thing about Captain America Civil War that bothered you?
Is the manner in which I feel it was completely implausible for metahumans and superheroes who have fought together in wars, they have fought together in battles, they fought together in previous films, to so easily dissent. I mean, you talk about camaraderie, but camaraderie amongst active duty members, and then you talk about camaraderie with active duty members who have served together, and then you talk about active duty members with camaraderie who have served together in the same battles and who are super and metahumans. You are talking about probably one of the tightest bonds you can imagine. And for one particular character, Captain America, in this point, to have such a dissenting viewpoint against this, given what he represents as an iconic character, is, you know, go America, America, America. You know, he's supporting the government in all positivity.
Yes.
Can't lie, the honorable way, the American way, red, white, and blue, red honor, blood, courage, everything. And then this is the character who goes and flies against you know, 50, 60 years of, you know, I guess this perceived moral code to then be so easily dissented from the general viewpoint that most characters in this film share, not even just the metahumans, but general citizens of the world, and most importantly, the government of the United States of America and the governments of the world. So in general, the whole world views something in a particular way. Captain America is the one lone guy who supports his best friend, Bucky Bad Boy, who was in a previous movie that I didn't see, so maybe I should preface some of my bias with that I did not
see.
Yeah,
I'll get into that a little
Winter
bit.
Winter Soldier, but that he's able to practically and effectively throw away everything, his whole moral backbone, the whole essence of the icon that is his story, the whole thing that makes him Captain America, the whole thing that makes him a team, the whole thing that makes him an Avenger, the whole thing makes him an active duty member with camaraderie amongst a group of metahumans, because he believes this that this one character, Bucky, didn't do what he did. And it's satisfied so simply. All he has to do is say, "Hey Avengers, hey world, I'm Captain America. Remember me? Remember that guy that saved all the world that many times, this, that, and the other? Remember me? Remember you, how much you love Captain America? Give me 36 hours to prove that this guy didn't do it. And mm-hmm. if 36 hours doesn't, it comes and goes, and I can't prove that this guy didn't do it, then let's go ahead and let this guy arrest him." You know, that seems more like a plausible way, and of course this movie then wouldn't have happened. So it's a story for story's sake, and I could just keep on talking, so I'll just leave it at that. Right, that was my biggest problem.
So there was two things there. One, and I agree with the first one, is that the breakdown into two groups. Now we got a lot of time and explanation and kind of depth into why Tony Stark is on one side, and we did get an explanation as to why Captain America is on the other.
Yeah, red versus blue.
But then the things underneath it, all the other characters, as to why they chose their side, is very, very murky. You just do not get, let's go through some of the pairs here. Scarlet Witch and Vision in this movie start off as friends. Vision is trying very hard to relate to her. She is, obviously, she's a turncoat from Ultron, and she is not really trained in any way. So they're bringing her in as almost like a trainee, and they're being very careful because she's one of the newest additions.
And very powerful, to be fair.
And she is dangerous, extremely dangerous if she decided to go off on her own.
Right.
That you see, they build that connection there, and then Hawkeye shows up and says, "We got to go," and she's like, "Okay," and uses her power to basically drill Vision into the ground. She knew she wasn't killing him. Of course, the audience wasn't quite sure about that.
No, and it seemed like he could have been, damaged.
It wasn't just this wasn't just like a few floors into the ground. No. She used her power to drill him several hundred feet. It seemed like
into the surface of the earth.
Yes.
After he just cooked her dinner.
Yeah, she gave two sentences in explanation for that. And then after that, she doesn't say anything. And then the two apologize to each other for the showdown that everyone has seen in the trailers at the airport.
Yeah.
That had nothing to it. Nothing at all. Hawkeye. We have no explanation as to why Hawkeye, who has a family, came out of retirement to help Captain America and get himself almost assuredly thrown in prison.
How was he even notified? And then, how does he know when to go to the mansion to go ahead and relieve?
Yeah.
And how does Hawkeye honestly think he's going to stop Vision? And he's able to... There's so many plot holes. I mean, you're going
to
talk
he
about...
He was relying on her. I mean, his plan was to rely on her, obviously. And you watch it like, that doesn't sound like a good plan.
No.
Like, what if she doesn't agree? You haven't spoken to her.
No.
Like, we have no real concept that they're friends. That Clint, or I'm sorry, yeah, his name's Clint Wilson, but he's Hawkeye. And they call him Clint throughout the movie, so yeah, that wasn't helpful.
And they couldn't really be friends because he goes back home with his wife and kids following Avengers Age of Ultron.
That was my understanding.
So they don't get together, powwow, have a beer, have a drink. She's probably, perceived as 17, 18? She's sub 21,
right? She's supposed to be, if not a teenager, early 20s.
Right, so they don't go out for drinks. There's no powwow. There's no camp. You know what I mean? He doesn't show up at Stark Cabin for a weekend. You know what I mean? And now all of a sudden, he's going to sacrifice everything.
And they do this all for
For what?
The first thing is, and then some of these other, the ones that joined him were Ant-Man and Falcon. You can understand why Falcon is backing Captain America. That's his guy.
Yeah.
So that one made sense.
Yeah.
But the rest of them, they just kind of like,
Vision was Stark.
Vision is Stark base, or is
because
a
it's
Carnation
Jarvis.
And he agreed. From the very beginning of the movie, he agreed with the idea that, and maybe we should go back to that. We should rewind here. The conflict is that after Sokovia, which is Age of Ultron, the world, the whole UN felt like that the Avengers were causing tremendous collateral damage. They were out of control. They were saving the world, but a lot of people were dying. And of course, the powers that be were afraid that, well, we don't seem to have much say in what they do. We want to have a say. And so this deal is that this UN body is going to manage Avengers. They're not going to go on their own initiative anymore. Captain America strongly disagreed with that, and so did Falcon. They both made their opinions clear, but that's it.
Yeah.
So those are the only two that were kind of pro, you know, against this. Everyone else was either neutral or in favor of it. Tony Stark was strongly in favor of it because he feels responsible for Ultron. And so he's in favor of this. He also, he loses Pepper Potts and feels like this might help get her back because she's tired of him doing this. But anyway, that's the conflict. So Captain America, like, and that's the second thing you said. I almost want to go through all these character by character, but maybe that's a little bit of a waste. But basically, that was just one example of where the characters' motivations for which side they chose is not, there's only three or four characters that have any explanation. The rest of them are like, oh, you know what? I'm just going to go with him.
And additionally,
why?
So then I'll throw that down and then I'll conversely say there was two parts that I really enjoyed about it. Paul Rudd's interest, however, probably appreciated by fans, kind of laughingly being one of the Avengers, but presenting himself in the film in a kind of funny and serendipitous way was one of my favorite parts of the film.
Oh, yeah.
Ant-Man was hilarious. Paul Rudd is hilarious. The way that his character operates and what he's able to do given his particular superpowers and the benefit that he was able to provide, however obviously implausible, given we're in a universe full of metahumans, was still hilarious. Same with Vision. You know, Vision's first thing before he does anything really awesome is just talk. Paul Bettany's a great character, and he's got a really learned experience. You can tell he's super smart, the character Vision, and he understands everybody's perspective. He's like a mega genius who obviously has vision given his name, and he can see things and interpret different perspectives. But he's so super powerful that it almost seems like he could just shut this whole thing down if he wanted to, but he maintains as kind of an impartial person that sides towards Stark. So
The scene where they're in the airport, where they're all head-to-head staring at each other, and the only two people that really talk are Tony Stark and Captain America. And I just am thinking that we've built up a lot of these characters already, and we are seriously just going to turn them into foot soldiers or lieutenants that just follow Captain America blindly or Tony Stark. By the way, Tony Stark is not a leader. So the fact that they're following Tony Stark was a little difficult. They agreed with him, granted. But the fact that he's the one at the lead, setting these things up and doing all the talking on the battlefield, Vision does speak a little bit, yeah. Natasha does a little bit. But that was the first thing. I agree with you with that entirely. To me, it was not fatal. I just think it's a lot of fan service, in my opinion. They wanted to bring all these characters in, and they wanted to have these characters fight each other in a realm where there was not anything at stake, because they were not going to kill each other.
Yeah, speaking of
stake,
There was nothing at stake. Nothing happens at the end. We already prefaced spoilers and everything, so for those of you who are still listening, nobody died in this film. There's no consequence to everybody's actions. There's some mediocre consequence, but I think you could still orchestrate this level of characterdom, if that's even a phrase, for lack of a better term, to be able to bring all these characters and into a film, again, like an Avengers, without necessarily having to just be this Civil War. And the basis of all this is similar to Batman vs. Superman, where UN and governments in the world, in particular Batman and Superman, it was American government, but in this film you're looking at the United Nations and global governments,
mm-hmm.
feel like they have a right to dictate how superhumans, metahumans, and just super people, because Vision isn't really a human, choose to save their world. And that's what I think is kind of almost laughable. I think the evolution, if that was to have this experience on our planet, these things don't really happen. These things don't happen because if you actually were in a room with Superman, the audacity to think that you could control his actions.
Or bring him to a congressional hearing and actually demand one.
That was
the Avengers, I think, would be a little bit different. Not Vision, though. But some of these characters, because they are not... Superman's a very special case, for sure.
Sure.
I think these other characters, as a group, they are definitely extremely effective. Mm. But there's this idea that, you know, maybe we can contain them and control them. And we should try, because we don't want to lose power. And we don't want to just... I mean, it's an insecurity and a fear of not having control. Because they, right now, they feel like they have... You know, all governments are afraid of losing power.
Right.
And if you have these group of enhanced... Yeah, that are doing all these things, and you have no say in it.
Right.
You're just relying on them. They just can't handle that. They need you to step in line and be a good soldier, or they'll try to eliminate you. And I think, and that was your second objection, which I think Winter Soldier, if you would have seen that, would have mitigated it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Winter Soldier explains a lot of why Captain America is now very jaded.
Right.
Towards the government.
He's almost a...
He is no... the question is, why is he still wearing the
dissenter.
Suit? He's a... he's now a skeptic.
Right.
Of duty, of honor, of the country, and of government control. He is now a skeptic.
Right.
And because of his experience with S.H.I.E.L.D. and with the Winter Soldier.
And you see that at the end, when he drops his S.H.I.E.L.D., Stark says, Tony tells him that the Vibranium S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't belong to him, that was his dad's. And Steve, in my opinion, shows that he's no longer Captain America by dropping the S.H.I.E.L.D.
It really
saying,
is.
Here, take it.
He really, this is his three movies, like all three of them are his basically resignation as captain.
Right.
He's no longer a captain now. He's resigning
now
his commission.
Rogers. Right. He's resigning his commission. I'm Steve Rogers, and I basically...
He's not that guy anymore.
Yeah. I resent you, you know, placing me at that. I'm kind of almost now not an insurgent, because that's kind of a bad term given, you know, the state of terror the world has, you know, been viewed in, but definitely a dissenter, somebody who doesn't want to take up the charge of his role anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that that's the motivation necessarily for him being the way that he is in this film. It's not like he goes against the government and that's why he chooses to help Bucky. It's just because, oh, that's my 80-year-old best friend. And then they have that stupid scene right there before they're supposed to go into the mountain in Siberia or something, and he's like, yeah, remember like Janie Fresno, and like we hung out, yeah, that was great. It's like, give me a break. Like, you guys are having some stupid anecdote while you're just about to go into like one of the most dangerous environments that you've had after you got done just basically breaking up the Avengers, wrecking the entire world, destroying, you know, some government. And by the way, you've got this like badass guy that's been chasing you the whole time. But now it's time for just to say,
yeah,
let's have some cute little anecdote.
I mean, the name Civil War is fitting here, because you do see kind of a breaking apart of the Avengers in this case. And it's oddly enough, of all the characters that does it, it's Captain America. Which,
yeah.
It's like, well, if he's doing it, then why is anyone still showing up to work today?
Tony Stark would be the first one to be like, all right, I'm out.
Actually, they didn't even want him at first. They brought him on he was a, what's it called?
Consultant. Right.
So this character, Steve Rogers, what they've done with him has changed him from, and my question, at the end of all this, I'm like, then why does he still have a uniform with red, white, and blue? Why does he still kind of stand for these things? He clearly no longer believes in them.
Mm.
And also the difference between like duty and doing your part, things like that, that is in contrary to your personal interests, family, friends, whatever. That's what you're giving up when you commit yourself to a cause greater than yourself.
But he keeps his moral code.
He keeps the moral. Well, he thinks that's how he's going to fulfill it.
He doesn't want to hurt anybody in a death sense.
But he thinks like this is why he loves America and does it, because he feels like he's fulfilling that. That's how he's going to make a difference, is by serving.
Right.
And now he no longer feels that way. He now feels like it's either a burden, or he actually is hurting people.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, at this point, he doesn't care.
He's actually hurting tons of people at this point.
That's the bizarre thing. Of all the characters there, he is the least concerned about the collateral damage.
Right.
Tony
Stark.
But
not early on. Early on, they have that. You can see when the building blows up. Because
when Scarlet Witch
raises up the explosion,
yeah.
and he's saved, he really has that. But he tells Scarlet Witch, look, he's a real soldier. He's actually, a soldier. He's been in a lot of battles. So he recognizes that there is this notion of collateral damage, that sometimes you have a greater good and good people sometimes die in the fight for the greater good. Because, you save a million people, you kill 10.
Yeah.
And so he's sharing that with the Scarlet Witch, and she's able to digest that enough to where they can kind of move forward. But then when he's breaking his buddy out of Germany, he says, what was this quote he tells him? He says, "All right, now don't kill anybody." And then he says, "I won't."
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, Bucky. When he's talking to Bucky in the apartment, and the GS9, the German Special Forces, are moving into kill Bucky, basically. And Captain America wants to make sure he's not killed because he doesn't think he's responsible for it. So he tells him, they're about to show up and they're not taking you alive. But if we're breaking out of here, and he's getting ready for battle, Bucky's, getting psyched. And Captain's like, "No, don't kill anyone."
Yeah.
And he's like, "I won't." And then
he hits him with a, and then at one point in the scene, he hits him with the battering ram. He takes the police battering ram and he wraps it around his middle arm, and then he just thrusts it with all his energy and force, and he hits the guy off the stairs into a wall 20 feet away. The guy drops down. He may have just been concussed on his solar plexus. He's probably dead right there. I mean,
they killed people.
They killed people after they just got done saying, "I won't." So how can Cap continually to break up this party, this institution of greatness that's, for lack of a better term, the world savers over and over again, to help his buddy out? For what?
Winter Soldier explains it.
It's so bad.
Winter Soldier explains it.
And when we had so many millions of dollars come out from Deadpool, and we both saw Deadpool, and what Deadpool was just completely drop dead freaking awesome. And that's why you saw the counter go up to 800 million so fast. So when I saw the counter go up to 800 million so fast, I walked into this movie just salivating. I couldn't wait. This is going to be so great. It's not going to be like Deadpool in a sense, the level of sarcasm type of movie that thing represented with all the fourth wall breaks and this, that, and the other. But it was going to be to the level of quality that was so high. But there wasn't. If you look at some of the Falcon scenes, when Falcon's flying and he's landing, it's so herky-jerky, it looks like a Coraline stop animation film. The suspended plausible deniability, okay, of Ant-Man growing to the size of...
Implausibility.
The implausibility of trying to have Ant-Man grow to the super size he is when his name is Ant-Man.
Did he do that in the movie? I didn't see Ant-Man. He doesn't do that in that movie. But
he does ant things in Ant-Man.
That's what I thought.
Right. So besides that, which I've got to say, I said the Paul Rudd part, the Ant-Man parts were some of the best parts of this film, so I can't go back, even though that was kind of silly. The Spider-Man calling out, that was great. Spider-Man calls out Captain America, and he's like, "Your shield defies all laws of physics," and everybody in the theater's cracking up, and it's true. It's completely preposterous. He throws his shield around like it's a boomerang, and it always comes back to him right to his hand immediately like it's Thor's hammer. I don't understand. They don't explain. It's just made out of vibranium. It's just super, super ultra hard metal. It doesn't have any magical qualities to it. It was crafted by Stark Sr., so it obviously is not imbued with any magical power. So how the fuck does it keep coming back?
No, that's beginning to end Captain America. The shield does that in all the movies, and it is this is why. And I'll tell you right now, like I did enjoy this movie, but I'll tell you, Captain America is is to me the least interesting Avenger. The first Captain America movie was weak, in my opinion. It was just ridiculous. It was fan service, in my opinion. It had no value other than an action movie, which is second rate compared to the other Avenger movies. And secondly, I don't really like either of those characters, Red Skull or Captain America. That one was weak. The second one was better because you had a broader theme about security and liberty. This movie was more about, are you willing to walk away from authority of, because you're meant to serve, humanity and serve your fellow men, and they're telling you they want you reined in, and you say no. You only trust your own opinion. You only trust your own instinct. You only trust your own friends.
Yeah.
He doesn't trust anyone else but his friends and his own judgment.
But weren't the rest of him his friends?
What's that?
Like, Stark, granted, they didn't always see eye to eye, but sometimes that's the best friend. The friend that'll kind of tell you where to shit and where the buckwheat is. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like.
No, that, what I mean
Sorry
is,
to interrupt you.
No, what I mean was, I lost train of thought. That was the buckwheat one. The contrast, the main, like this, the Avenger movies and Marvel does a good job of putting two themes together. One's the personal one and one's the broader one. And they do a pretty good job at that, albeit on a very fantasyful kind of childish way of doing it, comic books. But this one was more about, do we want to be part of, you know, the broader coalition of humanity defending Earth from its enemies? Or do we only trust ourselves and we're going to act on our own impulse and we're going to be separate? We're going to be, that's the definition of vigilante.
Vigilantes.
They use the word. That's Batman.
Brilliant.
That's basically Batman.
That's a brilliant supposition.
So that's what Captain America, who is supposed to be the one character that is against all that.
All of that.
Leads
exactly. It. For 80 years, this has been the character's mantra.
And then and you just mentioned, so that's the broader one. The personal one is him trying to save his friend from back when they were kids.
He goes to war and kills people.
They were friends before that. They were kids growing up together in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Bucky Barnes.
Yeah.
And that's who Winter Soldier is, and that's how he knows him. They went to war together, but they actually knew each other growing up, and that's why they have like this connection. And so that's the personal one. But then there's the broader one. I think Marvel does a good job at that. It's just that when you're watching, of all characters to do it with, again, I agree with you. Captain America, of all characters, the arc of him is going in the opposite direction of what Captain America is supposed to be.
Right.
And then to your first point, that how did everyone choose sides? They did not give in a 2.5-hour movie.
Right.
Did not really do that. So I agree with that. But let's go to the new additions. Some more things you can rip on if you want.
Ah.
The inclusion of Spider-Man. How'd you like that?
I liked it. We mentioned just briefly before the show how great it was to have Marisa Sorvino as Aunt May.
That's Marissa Tomei.
Marissa Tomei, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Marissa Tomei as Aunt May. That was awesome. The character, I liked how he was a squeaky-voiced, you know, pimple-faced nerd, young kid. That was fun to put a different spin on Spider-Man. Bringing in, having him be such a capable superhero was great. He was
even as somebody who was what, like 17.
He said he's had the powers for 6 months too.
So and in most of the movies and most of the mythos, he gets them in high school, right?
Right.
So he's maybe 18.
Yeah,
he looks 16.
He mentions the algebra exam. I took algebra at 16. So
yeah, I did too.
So he's probably 16 in the film. You're looking at sophomore or junior maybe. And it was, he had just had the powers for 6 months. They mentioned that in the film. So I think his skills were fairly, evolved and mm-hmm. tuned for an individual who had just started to have superpowers. He was able to combat some of the more powerful characters, including, the Winter Soldier, Bucky Barnes, in the film, and been able to subdue large characters and being able to do a lot of things like Captain America. Captain America is super freaking fast. I don't understand that one as much, but that was actually pretty cool.
You know,
just that scene where they were all running with the Black Panther, that was fun.
Well, there was when you're running through traffic,
that was fun.
That was a good sequence. I'm having a little trouble with this movie and actually Winter Soldier too. Of, all right, what are the rules in this universe?
Yeah.
Because you know this is fantasy, but even fantasy has rules.
Grounded in reality,
I'm not clear what the rules are, because you've seen in the Winter Soldier movie, that metal arm by Winter Soldier can do a lot. And he actually inflicts damage on Iron Man, on Captain America.
Yeah.
He can do a lot of work with that. Whatever it's made out of.
Vibranium?
I think so. They don't explain that.
Because that's supposedly like the hardest and best, strongest, whatever.
Yeah, and with Black Panther, for example, who was an interesting introduction. That's another intro player. But I think his claws are made out of that material, which is why he was able to scratch the shield.
It is.
But for Winter Soldier to go to punch Spider-Man, and Spider-Man is able to catch his metal fist, I'm trying to figure out, like, wait a minute. I know Spider-Man is a superhero.
Yeah.
But in kind of the hierarchy of his powers, I never really thought that he had that kind of ability. And I knew strength. He was stronger.
Yeah, you're talking about like personal body strength, and he's not.
That would put him above Captain America, because right. Captain America could not catch that guy's fist in the previous movie.
And he was getting hit by, there was a couple times that he got hit, and then after, towards the end of the film, or towards the end of this fight sequence in Germany, where you guys have seen the previews of the plane, and everything happens at the airport, he lands, and Iron Man comes over there, and is like, you're done, kid, you're done, and then he just like, no, I can do it, Mr. Stark, and then he just lays back and he holds his rib and he's like, eh. And I'm like, dude, like,
all of them could be doing that. All of them should be on the ground holding their ribs.
Yeah.
Because all of them were whipped into buildings, into walls, into aircraft. And, you know, they all kind of, kind of grind, groan in pain. And then they get back up and rejoin the battle. And you do get the impression there was a scene in there. And the idea here is that they're obviously pulling punches. Because that's the only way you can explain this. Because throughout all of this, they weren't trying to kill each other. Because
they're friends.
They're friends. God, so what is this? This is basically like what do you call it?
Like a mock fight?
No. What do you a sparring partner? You know,
yeah,
like,
sparring.
So they're just all they're doing. So everyone on Captain America's side is just trying to buy them time so they can get to the plane.
Yeah.
And so that's what they're doing. And it's like. But they're obviously throwing each other around like crazy and doing things that are clearly dangerous and inflicting all this pain on each other. But in this reality, no, they're not. And even at one point, I think Natasha, Black Widow, Scarlet Witch said something to Hawkeye. It's like, you're pulling your punches, when he was trying to fight Black Widow. Which, again, Black Widow and Hawkeye have a lot of history, and we just don't even bother with any of that. We just go straight to them throwing punches. So at that point, and they have like a little exchange there, and you're like, once you see that, the whole rest of the fight's like, oh, okay, so no one's really taking this seriously. This is just a bunch of buddies having like a brawl. And like, and then later on, so we're cool, right? After this, like, clearly this was like a minor. And then, of course, Rhodey gets hurt.
Oh, that was a...
And it's like, what the... So all of that battle, all that lead up was for action, to satisfy action, to satisfy the ninjutsu, all the new powers. You know, we get to see Spider-Man and Black Panther for the first time, or second time in Black Panther's case. And that's what that scene was.
Yeah.
It was all just for fun, and just Rhodey just happened to get hurt. And it looks like an accident, because Vision is the one that hit him. And it's like, well, so this is clearly fan service, a bunch of new characters that people have been wanting for, Spider-Man in particular.
Yeah.
Who, for reasons I don't understand, I don't like Spider-Man. But he has a big fan base, no doubt about it. I don't know why.
He was to be fair, he was the original leader of the Avengers in the comic book canon, and... To get into a little bit of a real world, really not politics, but financial, and the differences between Sony Spider-Man and Marvel Spider-Man is Marvel had given Sony the rights for Spider-Man years ago.
Mm, okay.
And they made their original Spider-Man with...
Tobey Maguire.
Tobey Maguire. And then they made another one, and then what happened was... Those rights were about to go back to Marvel, but part of the contract that was originally written, as I understand it, is if they use the property, they get to use it for a little bit more. So they kept coming up with those shitty movies. I mean, I say shitty because I'm not a big fan of Andrew Garfield. I think he did a better service to the character of Spider-Man and Peter Parker than I actually liked Tobey Maguire. But what I mean is they had to just churn out some quick movies that didn't necessarily have this type of writing and power behind that these Marvel and the budgets behind that these Marvel films have. And then eventually this last year, at the end of 2015, I believe Sony and Marvel struck a deal to say, okay, look, you can go ahead and use it, and you can use it in the movies, but we're gonna keep the merchandising rights. So I think that the way that it works is, like, any toy or anything that happens retail or something like that goes to Sony. But anything that happens within relation to they're allowed to use the character, mm-hmm. and then some of the money from a Spider-Man purchases will go over to Marvel so they can continue to use it. So now he's in, because now there's legalities to keeping the intellectual property, so that they had to include him in the film. As for Black Panther, he's coming out with his own. He's got his own film coming out now soon too. I figured I would mention that real quick. At the end of this, what you can kind of see is Doctor Strange is opening up November 4th.
Mm-hmm.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is opening up Cinco de Mayo next year. Spider-Man's Homecoming, and this is why I bring these movies up, it's called Homecoming. Could it be any more campy given what I just said about what Spider-Man and their legalities and the property rights and how it is able to happen?
You think there's a little play? Oh, okay.
There's a little, I think there's a play on word or a tongue-in-cheek thing. Spider-Man's Homecoming means it's coming back to Marvel, and then Sony's just going to get some of the residuals based on the character. Then you got Thor Ragnarok, November 3rd, 2017, and Black Panther is in February 16, 2018, followed by Avengers Infinity War, Ant-Man and the Wasp, and then another Captain Marvel. So, and then Infinity Ant-Man War 2. Ant-Man and the Wasp. And so it's just like, I was afraid that this was the end of Avengers. That's another reason I didn't like this movie, because it seemed like it was the end of Avengers, so I really left the theater kind of with a bad taste in my mouth. But apparently there's it another one not. Coming out. No, the end of
there's
it.
There's two Infinity War movies.
We have part one and part two.
This is, I think they're setting that they wanted to, all these movies, I'll give them credit for this, but the way things end is always different. Mm-hmm. So this is not like a family sitcom where by the end of the episode everything's back to normal, and then the next episode things get weird. But then by the end, like that's the sitcom episodic kind of way of explaining thing of presenting a story. They always try to change things without killing people. Mm-hmm. One, which is not easy to do because if your characters don't really feel like they're at risk, the drama wears off. That's why Walking Dead is amazing. Someone's going to die. You know it. this case, again, we started at the beginning. Nobody dies throughout this whole thing. Rhodey gets crippled, but we neither of us believe he actually will remain crippled. We both believe Tony Stark will find a way to give him bionic legs and he'll be fine and War Machine will be back. So, you know, there just wasn't much. For the first, let's see, hour 45 of this movie, there's just not much at stake. And the strange kind of evolution of Captain America was a little unusual. I think what made this movie okay for me and actually pushed it up from just another popcorn munching, kind of movie, which is, I would just give 3 stars and forget about it. Because let's be honest, CGI has been around for 30 years now, or 25 years, 20 years. These superhero movies, there's now 20 to 25 of them now. So just making a movie with superhero action and some fan service, to me, that's like, that's average. Anyone can do that. Everyone's doing that. What pushed it beyond that for me was the final 45 minutes and the actual real, in my opinion, the real Civil War, which comes down to the two characters that got the most attention.
Yeah.
Captain America and Iron Man, Tony Stark and Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
And why that friendship terminated into a battle that nearly killed one of them. Mm-hmm. And it is about Bucky, of course, but it's also a broader about lying. It's about trust.
Philosophies.
The philosophy things at the very end melted away because he found out Tony Stark's rage changes once he sees that video of what happened to his parents.
Right.
That then it becomes personal.
Right.
Then the philosophy ends and the personal takes over.
Right.
And it's anger and it's every, and that's when you see the Civil War, and that's what the villain in this movie was trying to do, tear them apart.
Sure.
And he semi succeeded. The Avengers are basically down to 2 or 3 real members. The rest of them are on the run. Or fugitives, whatever you want to call it. Now they could still intervene.
We didn't even talk about that, about how after the service to humanity, after all of these apocalyptic world ending events were saved by these Avengers, these individual characters, Hawkeye, the Scarlet Witch, Black Widow, Thor, all these guys. They saved the world countless times in individual stories and individual movies, as well as the Avengers. But yet, because of this one event in Germany where they didn't bring in Bucky, they sided with Bucky, and then eventually they get locked up. They get no preferential treatment. They're in a max security prison that's actually a floating island that's akin to the place you locked up the guy in I'm trying to think of his name. Vin Diesel, he played the character that could see in the dark.
Oh, like the Chronicles of Riddick.
Yeah. It's a place you lock up Riddick. They get no decent food. They get no decent wardrobe. They get no decent cell. They save the planet how many times individually and in all these movies, and they get no preferential treatment whatsoever?
I don't think they get credit for Ultron. I think most people say that and be like, well, you're responsible for Ultron, so that was really just you cleaning up your own mess.
Huh.
And actually, they will also, I bet you, if you are a real cynic, you could say even the first Avengers was them cleaning up their own mess. Because why is Loki here? Mm-hmm. Loki's here because of Thor and the Digitari. And it's like, well, why was Thor here? Well, Thor is one of the Avengers. And so they'll argue that, well, one of your Avengers, his brother showed up to take over the world. So actually, you're almost responsible for New York as well. It's not fair.
Individuals aren't responsible for others' actions. Like, you can't be responsible for your brother. That's not how the law works. You don't arrest somebody because your brother's a murderer.
We're not talking war. We're not talking about the law here.
I know,
And this is an interpretation of what the Avengers are. So they will say, yes, you saved the world, but you're also responsible for a lot of the threats that you are saving us from.
Well,
that is the cynical attitude towards it.
But there's all the individuals. Granted, Hawkeye didn't get an individual. Black Widow didn't get an individual. You know, some of these characters didn't get an individual movie. But there's lots of scenes that they do before the lead-ups. Even in this film, there was that one with the nuclear, not the nuclear, the biological weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they kept the super bad guy from getting a biological weapon. Yes, there was some collateral damage, and it was in a foreign country. I'm not trying to say that there wasn't a loss, but the overall benefit could not be diminished even by those kinds of people. So we're talking about humans of this alternate universe who may have different philosophical viewpoints than we share as real humans on our Earth. They still would recognize a thanks to these individuals.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's all these events. What we really need is we need a real timeline in their universe. So let's say the first Avengers took place in, just for sake of discussion, I don't actually have the real time. Let's just say for sake of discussion that happened in March of 2015. And these events in these films took place in, you know, June of 2016. There was probably all this time in between that they were saving people, mm-hmm. cats out of a tree, major nuclear disasters, criminal. There's all, you know, they weren't just out playing golf. They were actually being Avengers.
Yeah.
So they were saving the world countless times.
I don't disagree.
You know what I mean? It's just, and that's my thing. I'm not fighting you with it. My whole thing is that the UN and the governments in the world, in both Supes versus Bats and in this film, one, they don't appreciate and thanks to the Avengers for all of the good that they've done. They only chastise them and write them about the casualties that happen as a result of the contingency of war. And then they feel like they can control them. So it's so implausible that I start to have a real struggle as being both a nerd, a comic book hero, and a computer programmer from really wanting to see any more of these films. They're just getting so campy and bad.
I totally understand why they would want to. So I buy that timeline. I buy that approach. If they want more evidence of what the Avengers are doing, they can just go see the movies.
Sure.
But the other thing, I guess this is pretty minor after we've covered all this, but the movie's 2 hours and 26 minutes.
Yeah.
That to me is just, I mean, I started to wear down in the last, towards the very end.
Yeah.
Luckily the ending it's hard to explain, but basically it's not like a climax build, and then there's an ending and it stops. There's kind of like this Black Panther speaking to the villain about why he did it, and then on the other side you see the two of them fighting about ready to kill each other.
Mm.
So it's kind of almost a tragic point rather than, oh, is the bad guy finally going to get killed, you know? But 2 hours and 26 minutes, I start to wear out. I remember back in the day that action movies were usually 1.5 to 2 hours max. They didn't go 2.5 hours, and it seems a regular basis Marvel does this. Now, I'm in the minority, because mm-hmm. nobody seems to have that problem with these movies, except me.
You're right. We disagree on that point.
They get the other movies that... I have heard that some people feel the Batman movies were a little too long. A few people have said Batman versus Superman was a little bit too long. But for the Marvel, no one seems to object to these, or Transformers for that matter. A lot of these newer summer action movies are 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
225, 230, 235. To me, that's just really, especially if the movie is nonstop action for that long, I start going numb. And by the end of it, like, it's like, all right, they're going to pound on each other again like they have been for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like, it's starting to lose its bite to me. And we just talked about
pounding
on each other, and they just get up like, all right, let's do it tomorrow. You know, it's like, if...
let's do it again right now.
It's not about plausibility to me. It's about, well, how am I supposed to take this seriously? Because apparently they don't die, and they don't really... experience real pain.
Well, that is a plausibility thing, and I think that's fair, and you made a good point, and I agree with you in the fact that that you can get numb to it, not only just visually, because the eye can only take up so much, and I'll give a good example. In Transformers 1, and really all the Transformers, when the bots transform, the screen is so busy.
Yes.
There's so much going on that just visually, cerebrally, we can only take in so much. Mm-hmm. And when that happens over and over and over and over again, just naturally we're going to become numb because our brains just can't digest it. And we've experienced it and it falls flat. So I agree with you that the level of fighting and the duration of each individual fight, not just the length of the fight, but individually between two characters, like the bout or the round, as we can call it, is just so long. I agree with you on that. I disagree with you on the total runtime of the film, because me, for an individual who takes time out of my day to go to a building, you know, buy a large soda, buy a popcorn, spend a considerable amount just to participate in the event, feels kind of let down when it's over so soon. Hmm. I feel you can tell a good story. Like, you look, and I hate to mention this in light of we're talking about an action movie, but you look at Titanic, for example, being able to tell so many stories and have so many individual character developments and start to identify and appreciate particular characters that you may self-identify with happens over the course of a longer period of time. At least me, this is in my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. I appreciated days when we had intermissions or when we had things that gave us an opportunity to spend an evening at the movie. Because, you know, if it's a 90-minute runtime, like your typical animation, you know, your cartoon animation or your digital animation, it's just over so quick. The story's so short. You don't get in my opinion, don't get the sense of enjoyment out of buying the popcorn, sitting there, eating it with somebody. And so I like the longer runtime films, but I don't want to have it just be a whole bunch of Transformer animations.
Yeah, I don't have an objection to the actual a movie being 2.5 hours. I don't give it much credit for an action movie being 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Especially an action movie which has this level of intensity. Because this movie is intense in terms of action. They all are.
And it's great in that respect.
It is great. It is great. But it's and even if I were to watch the last 30 minutes by itself, that would be awesome. I mean, there's nothing in particular about the last scenes that make them weaker than the first. It's just that they're coming after I've just seen 2 hours of it. That's all my point is.
You're absolutely right on that.
And, the ending is inconclusive. They're obviously, half of them are now fugitives. Half of them are still technically Avengers, I suppose. And the next movie, the after credits trailer was for Spider-Man, which is coming out next year, you said?
Yeah.
And Black Panther, also coming out next year.
Let's see. I've got that for you. 1 second here. Yeah, I think that's right. I'll have to go back and Doctor Strange, November 4th.
Oh yeah, that's this year. Doctor Strange.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is May 5th next year.
Okay.
Spider-Man: Homecoming is July 7th, 2017. Ragnarok, 2017. Black Panther, 2018. Infinity War, 2018. Captain Marvel 2019, Infinity War Part 2 2019.
Jesus Christ.
And as yet, untitled Marvel movies on July 12th, 2019, May 1st, July 10th, and November 6th in the year 2020.
Wow, they don't even know what the movie is, but they're going to make it.
Yet untitled.
All right, so of all the superhero movies, DC or Marvel, I can already guess, but obviously you put this movie towards the bottom.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but 3 out of 5, and that's a Netflix movie I won't watch.
I don't think I would watch. I just don't think I would watch this movie again. But I wouldn't watch any of the Captain America movies again, so that doesn't mean a whole lot. I do watch Avengers over and over. I love that one.
Yeah,
and I do love the first Iron Man movie. The second and third started to lose their way, but the first one's very cool. I'm trying to think of the other Avenger movies, because I'm not the biggest Avenger fan. I didn't like the Avengers as a comic book guy as a kid, but I do like some of these movies. They're just great. I don't like the Hulk movies. I'm trying to think what else. But the Iron Man, cool movies. The first one's awesome. The second and third a little bit weaker. Avengers by itself. Ultron was a little bit of a sensory overload, but also a cool movie. I would probably see it again. This one, probably not. So I would put it maybe in the middle or towards the upper middle on the list of about 20, 25 movies, but this is not one of my favorites. And just so we'll give you some numbers here on how it's doing with audiences. The audience disagrees. Now, I would give it 4 stars or 3. So I'd give, I'm a little better than you, but I'm not.
I'll come up from 3 to about 3.25 max. I wouldn't go quite 3.5 because that's a Netflix movie I'd watch again.
So yeah, so the 92% or 80 to 90% of the audience disagrees with us, which is fine. That just makes them all stupid than us, but whatever. 9% liked it with an average rating of 4.4 out of 5. So much higher than either of us would have given it. I think it's the fan service. I think the inclusion of all these new characters and seeing all of them in one movie again as an ensemble cast, I think that fan service and the action combined is more is more than enough for most of these people. And I don't mean that derogatory wise. I just mean that the Avenger fans seem to just want that. The story itself, you and I agree. There's some things about it that just... It might be a great idea on paper, but it just isn't enough for me to give it a 5-star. So the critics also gave it a good score at 89%. That was a little surprising. As for box office, let me pull that up. It is thus far the estimate domestic gross is $242 million.
Okay.
So and I think worldwide it's already crossed $500 million. So as of now, it's on pace to beat Batman vs. Superman by a little bit.
Okay.
And it's on pace with Deadpool. That's domestic. That's not worldwide. Worldwide, Batman vs. Superman has been the biggest movie of this year.
Okay.
Deadpool did not do well outside of the U.S. You could guess why. I would say out of these three movies of 2016, this year, I think Deadpool is the best out of the three. It's a totally unorthodox movie. I mean, some people would probably say it's not because it's rated R and it's a totally different kind of style. I don't care. I just love the fact that that movie was so good on an $80 million budget when these two other movies have budgets at the $250 to $300 million range. And I just think that's hilarious.
Yeah.
So those are the numbers on the movie. So obviously the vast majority of people disagree with us. I did like it. I did enjoy it. I did think it was worth it, but I agree with you. I'm probably not even going to Netflix it or
no.
If it's on HBO or some movie channel, I'm probably just going to skip past it because there's so many movies now that you can watch for free or whatever, or stream that compete with this. And I just think a lot of them are better.
Notable parts in this, I do want to end on a positive note. Traditionally, I love comic book movies. As you may know, my name is Microsoft Matt. I'm a big nerd. Chadwick Boseman, he played the Black Panther in this film. He was remarkable. You may have
Good
remembered
work, yeah.
him from... he played Jesse Owens in where the Olympic runner, as well as the baseball movie he played... I want to say he played Willie Mays, but I don't think that's right. It was 42, I think it was the name of the film.
Oh, Jackie Robinson.
Jackie Robinson, thank you. Not
yeah.
Willie Mays, my mistake. Apologies. And he I think he's just a remarkable actor. He takes on an African accent in a really classic way that just and the writing for his character and his lines were just really well done, really well delivered. He was a classy character. He was actually the most honorable one at the end, even though Iron Man, what he was trying to do before the very ending of the film was fairly honorable. I really enjoyed Chadwick's presentation of Black Panther. I really look forward to seeing his individual film. Kevin Feige is committed to doing a Black Widow movie. If you're interested in seeing more Scarlett Johansson, because I know I am, that looks like it may be coming out. It wasn't on the books yet, but they are committed to doing one. Given the cast of this film, I can understand why so many people liked it. I'm just going to go through a quick list. There was Spider-Man, Captain America, Iron Man, Black Panther, Ant-Man, Bucky, Baron Zemo, Wanda Maximoff as the Scarlet Witch, Black Widow, Crossbones, Everett K. Ross, Vision, and I'm getting there because I'm bringing this all to a head with a really funny ending. Clint Barton, he's the Hawkeye, Kate, War Machine, Sam Wilson, and get this one, Thunderbolt Ross. For those of you who didn't know, it was played by William Hurt. His first name's Thunderbolt. That's pretty great. And Karpov. So there was an ensemble cast. I can understand why so many people wanted to see this film. I did. Feel free to check it out if you want to. I think you'll have a lot of the same criticisms that we do, and you may have a little bit of laughs during the film. feel free to enjoy the film. Don't take it too seriously as usual. And definitely, definitely and there, suspend disbelief.
And there are some, there's some Easter eggs in there. I caught maybe one, but like I said, I'm not a big Marvel guy, so most of them did not really excite me that much. A new Spider-Man movie does not excite me. The writers for this one are the guys that did the previous Captain America movies, Christopher Markus and Stephen McFeely. The directors are the Russo brothers, Anthony and Joe. They also did the other Captain America movies. So this is a this grouping, the people that did this are the same ones that did Winter Soldier and the first Avenger movie. So that is so that's the style you're getting as well. By the way, if you are also interested in seeing more of Scarlett Johansson, I would recommend the movie Under the Skin. It is a terrible movie, but you see a lot of Scarlett Johansson. And it's a terrible movie. I honestly feel like it's one of these indie movies where people thought it was like transformational and very heady. And I can tell you basically what it looks like to me is like we're gonna make a sci-fi movie and write a script where we can find just five different excuses to get Scarlett Johansson out of her clothes, and that's basically what the movie is. All right, so the next one we're probably gonna do will be on X-Men Apocalypse, I'm guessing. You excited for that?
Yeah, no, definitely. I saw a couple previews. I'm always tuning into it. I still love comic book movies. I'm just, I don't know, so many. It's maybe I'm starting to go a little numb.
I'm starting. I have the last couple movies, and it's, some of these things are starting to lose their bite as far as I'm concerned. This one in particular, I've always been a fan of Apocalypse, the character Apocalypse. I'm very, very worried that they fucked it up because of what the character looks like and just what I'm hearing so far about the plot and about what's going to happen and what's being presented here. So I'm a little worried. Early reviews are not good. So I am definitely very worried. I'm going to go see it anyway, and I'm definitely going to try and hope for the best. But I don't know. Doesn't look good. So, all right. Well, that'll do it for the movie review part of it. Here's a little bit of paperwork here. If you are a self-published author or one with a book through a small press and you'd like a review or possibly an interview here on Thought Crime to talk about your book, email me at jwfox@prescientscifi.com. That's prescient, SCIFI.com. I do science fiction exclusively. I have a pretty broad definition of that. Although I'll tell you right now, if you have a novel that's about superheroes, I'm probably not going to read it. That is one little subgenre that I just mostly is fantasy anyway. But anyway, anything else that's science fiction, time travel, steampunk, whatever. Follow us on Twitter at Prescient Sci-Fi, and also check out PrescientSciFi.com, where you will get where you will find this podcast as well as on iTunes. And you also find all the other stuff that I do, some of the blogs that I write. Microsoft Matt joins me for movie review podcast, but he is not responsible for the crap you see on the website. So I'm not putting you in that group because I don't want you to be ashamed. So, but that'll do it. Matt, thanks for joining me. Had a good time.
Glad to be here. And y'all take care.
All right. Until next time.